Inequality, social immobility, and political polarization are only a few crucial phenomena driven by the inevitability of social structures. Social structures determine who has power and influence, account for why people fail to assimilate basic facts, and enlarge our understanding of patterns of contagion from the spread of disease to financial crises. Despite their primary role in shaping our lives, human networks are often overlooked when we try to account for our most important political and economic practices. In the new book, The Human Network, How Your Social Position Determines Your Power, Beliefs, and Behaviors, Stanford professor Matthew Jackson illuminates the complexity of the social networks in which we are, often unwittingly, positioned and aimed to facilitate a deeper appreciation of why we are who we are. Again, the name of the book is The Human Network, and it's a pleasure to welcome Matthew Jackson to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you for having me.
Matthew Jackson is the William Eberly Professor of Economics at Stanford University. And again, the name of the book is The Human Network. What brought you to the subject, ultimately, of social position and it determining power and beliefs and behaviors?
Yeah, I mean, I guess as an economist, we're always interested in how people act and, you know, why do they buy certain products? Why do they have certain opinions? Why are some people employed and other people unemployed? These are really basic questions, and a large determinant of that is the social environment in which people are embedded. And so as an economist, I was just naturally drawn to this question.
When it comes to the human network, how do you define that?
They take many forms. So we're embedded in lots of different networks, but basically we can think of the connections we have to friends, colleagues, acquaintances, you know, people we talk to. We're asking for, you know, advice on which movie to go to, or, you know, we reach out to when we need a job. These are people who shape our lives.
So let's talk about technology and changing the workforce and you believe leading to increased inequality and polarization. So talk a little bit about that problem, how that has happened, and what we can look to in trying to get away from that.
Yeah. I mean, there's two real basic forces that are at work. One is that technology's just been changing the workforce in general. And so automation, for instance, is replacing people like travel agents. And soon it's going to be disrupting our driving. We won't have truck drivers anymore in another decade. So there's sort of fundamental changes that are going on in the workplace. And what that's doing is creating inequality in the sense that the people who have high education and lots of skills that are helped by automation or by computers are basically earning more, and people who are being replaced by them are being pushed into less productive jobs and earning less. So that's a basic economic force. But at the same time, these people's networks are completely separate from each other. And so there's whole groups of people who are sort of stuck in the bottom and don't have access to education and don't know how to get education. And the fact that they're trapped in this produces both inequality and immobility. And those two things together produce a pretty volatile mix, which I think is leading to a lot of the polarization you're seeing, not just in the U.S., but pretty much around the world at this point in time.
This has so many effects, and I guess it's really hard to even put it into a really clear picture because the tentacles are so long and so numerous.
Yes. Yeah, and I think it's easy to underestimate how important the social structures are in determining how our lives play out. And the fact that, you know, we have this basic tendency to associate with people who are very similar to ourselves means that our networks are really insular, and they're a big part of all of these stories.
When you look at the trading relationships, these relationships are necessary and ultimately help avoid conflict. But What do you think, you know, where are we at now when it comes to the interests of each party, how we instead of going in an all-out war every time we disagree of what happened to diplomacy, what happened to that discussion, as opposed to immediately acting?
Yeah, I mean, I guess as your question sort of points out, our networks operate at very different levels, and so there's networks between, you know, social networks between people. There's networks between countries, and there's, you know, the more that countries trade with each other, the more that they have aligned interests. And even if their governments don't see eye to eye on a lot of issues, they have something in common that binds them together and makes it in their interest to avoid conflicts. And I think, you know, one sort of dangerous thing we're seeing in the world these days is that we're seeing sort of a retrenching of, you know, Brexit, breaking apart the European Union, which has been the most important peaceful organization in the last 5 or 6 decades. We're seeing a trade war with China, which, you know, is between two large countries that really have a lot to gain by cooperating. You know, these are things that are very important.
These social structures who determine who has power and influence, I mean, that's something obviously with the college admission story we're talking a lot about, of this idea, which we've been talking about quite a bit lately, which is looking at structure and power and influence. And so it, if anything, that story this past week had a very human component to it and was still horrible.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, I mean, people should rightfully be outraged at the abuse of the system and the fact that people are being able to buy their ways into positions that other people merit. You know, that's really awful. And I think what, hopefully this will start a dialogue that looks at sort of more deep structural issues with higher education and its access. And just to give one number, if you look, for instance, at Ivy League schools or top universities, look at the fraction of people that come from the top quarter of the income distribution compared to the bottom. It's 20 times higher, 20 times more likely you're going to find a student from the top quarter of the income distribution than the bottom quarter. That's an enormous disparity. And that's not people just buying their way in. That's a deeper structural problem, in the sense that the you know, in high school, there's a whole set of students whose parents don't know what it's like to go to college. They don't know what it takes to help them study for SATs. They don't know what they should be doing to fill out which kinds of forms. The students are surrounded by other students who aren't going to college, and so their social networks aren't giving them the right signals, and they, you know, they tend to follow what their peers are doing. And that separation in the social networks is really fundamental and very difficult to overcome. And that's sort of a really deep issue that's I think, a much broader issue than you know, the fact that some people are buying their ways into these situations.
Right. When it comes to the human networks, as you write about in the book, why do you believe they are so often overlooked?
I think, you know, we're all used to being in them. So, you know, we're comfortable and knowing that we rely on friends and family for all kinds of things. But, you know, I think we give ourselves too much credit for what we do and what we accomplish. And a lot of it's shaped by people around us. And we tend to sort of forget about that. And even though these, I think also we don't realize the extent to which these networks are really stark in terms of their separation structures and their inequalities. And if you begin to see how strongly these networks exhibit certain features, then we begin to understand that these are really governing our lives a lot more than we really realize.
The When it comes to a network, where does the leadership come from?
I guess leadership comes, you know, there's sort of one type of leadership is just a little bit by accident, in the sense that people that are more popular, if you have a lot of friends, it's easier to meet new people. And so people that have more friends tend to gain more friends and sort of climb a social ladder, if you will. Those individuals can end up having more influence in a society than somebody who has fewer friends. So one type of leadership comes just from, you know, from actually being seen by more people and being observed by more people. Then there's more, you know, other types of leadership where people are really in important critical positions, connecting other individuals and being a prime connector. Those are two very different things, and they exhibit different kinds of features.
You write a lot about financial networks, and the name of that chapter is Too Connected to Fail. So talk a little bit about that, of what the pitfalls are when you are too connected.
Sure. So you know, I guess a great thing that's happened over the past some odd decades is, you know, globalization has brought a greater interconnectedness in our financial networks and more investment across countries and a lot of prosperity. I mean, the poverty rate has fallen dramatically in the last three decades. So there's a lot of good news that comes with it. But at the same time, what we've ended up doing is building enormously large financial institutions. So some of the largest banks now in the world control, you know, if you look at the 10 largest banks in the world, they control most of the capital in the world. And that means, and it's pretty hard for other companies to avoid doing business with them. And so what we saw in the last financial crisis is that when some of them start having liquidity problems or going bankrupt, they can potentially drag down the rest of the economy with them. And so, you know, now what they're doing is no longer something that's just of consequence to them and their shareholders, but it's of consequence to a whole economy. And understanding that network and understanding those implications means that we should be paying much more attention to how these people are managing their businesses. It's a situation where these markets can really be problematic.
There is you have figures in this book, and there are a lot of dots and lines. Am I supposed to understand that?
Yes. Hopefully the descriptions inside the chapters will help. Networks are ones where pictures are worth a lot in terms of explaining ideas. But they are, you know, they look complicated, but they're actually, very, very illuminating. And they give us an idea of, you know, that sort of seeing your social network gives you a completely different perspective on what your life is like than just sort of being embedded in it and not realizing what it looks like.
Well, and if anything, it does, it helps you just see how complex it is, right?
Yes. Yeah. And that, so both how complex it is, and the fact that you know, you might be separated from the rest of the network, or that you might be less central than you thought you were. These are kinds of things that you can see very plainly in these pictures.
As we wrap up, I do want to talk about globalization, because you end the book with that and talk about globalization and our changing network. So where are we headed?
I think the internet has been wonderful in terms of connecting people at a great distance and very quickly. So you can be in touch with people all over the world instantaneously. But it's also brought a huge amount of noise to our society, and the ability for, you know, it's given everybody in the world a microphone at the same time. And that means that we become increasingly reliant on filters and systems to try and, you know, push news to us, and they have an enormous control over what we hear. And our tendency to look for things that we like means that we end up creating networks that are more insulated than ever. And so even though we're becoming more connected, we're also becoming more segregated at the same time. And these forces, the combination of forces, is really quite interesting.
The name of the book is The Human Network: How Your Social Position Determines Your Power, Beliefs, and Behaviors. The book is published by Pantheon. Matthew Jackson is a professor of economics at Stanford University, and it's a great pleasure to have you on our program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Joe.
Great pleasure to have you. Again, the name of the book is The Human Network by Matthew Jackson. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.